studio, I have guests from the Colorado Criminal Justice Reform Coalition, Emmy Award-winning filmmaker Alex Landau.
You're too kind. Thank you for having us this afternoon.
Thank you for having us.
And Justin Cooper, your role with this organization?
Yeah, I'm the deputy director of the Colorado Criminal Justice Reform Coalition, also known as CCJRC. Our organization has been around since 1999 with a long-term mission of reversing or ending the trend of mass incarceration in the state of Colorado. We've had several successes in the field of reform. Our organization has focused primarily on policy advocacy in three particular areas: drug policy reform, reentry, and sentencing reform. We have also been responsible over the last 10 years for the closure of 6 prisons, 4 of them being private, and the reallocation of $35 million from prison savings into mental health and substance abuse treatment for those inside. We recently expanded our mission over the last 2 years, and our new mission is to eliminate the overuse of the criminal justice system and advance community health and safety. We were very intentional about our mission. We are currently over-incarcerating, over-policing, and over-criminalizing our citizens. In addition, we're not adequately investing into public health, where communities are actually healthy and safe. And so CCJRC is intricately focused on how do we build infrastructure and community to where we really promote public safety that works. The district attorney's office and the elected district attorney has multiple touch points to multiple issues like immigration, like healthcare, like criminal justice, education, that they influence outside of the courtroom. District attorneys are very influential when it comes to policy, and so I do believe that social justice organizations, to see the candidates running for district attorney in Boulder, really understand the platform in which the work that they do and how that connects and how that ties and what is their vision for reform as it relates to those multiple issues that the social justice organizations focus on.
This individual does overlook, I believe it's a $60.5 million budget from year to year.
Yes. So when we look at the amount of money that district attorneys are responsible for, we have to understand, again, I think this speaks directly to the amount of power and influence this office holds. The DA's office is responsible for deciding who's eligible for victim services, who will be charged with a felony, a misdemeanor, or even charged at all. In many cases, they have the ability to perpetuate cultures of misconduct in different law enforcement departments by way of their discretion. They also are responsible for this trend of mass incarceration we've seen exercised over the past 20, 30, 40 plus years, where the use of their discretion is landing people who do not belong in confinement in state and federal penitentiaries.
What do you think are the greatest challenges an incoming DA faces with regard to the public trust?
I think the greatest challenges that an incoming elected district attorney faces when it comes to trust with community is, what is the relationship with that district attorney's administration office with community with the prior district attorney? I think that the challenge that a newly elected DA comes in is the history of that administration and their relationship to the community and being able to mitigate that, understand that. I think a biggest challenge is really understanding the culture and dynamics of the community and the county that the district attorney is responsible for. I think one of the biggest challenges they will face is making sure that they understand the values of that community. What are the priorities as regards to public health and safety that the community is demanding from a district attorney's office? I perceive that as a challenge because it's vitally important and essential that a newly elected DA does that evaluation and that level of analysis and understanding the constituency in which he or she represents. And what are their values and how to align with that to ensure health and safety happens. I think a major challenge that a newly elected district attorney would face is being able to draw a balance in the district attorney's and their administration's response to community. You know, it's our organization and our position that we have a predominant criminal justice response to what is often health issues. And so I think a newly elected DA has to be very intentional about understanding how their administration is responding to the needs of community, the needs of public health and safety. And that analysis is vital in reference to being able to truly build trust in communities. I think it's important for voters to understand that elected DAs are the figurehead of an entire administration, that they have chief deputies, line level prosecutors that all work under them. And so when we think about the newly elected district attorney, we also have to think about the entire administration and what is the culture of that administration? How will they lead in the vision as it relates to building trust and community? The number one challenge to me for a newly elected district attorney is being able to authentically say, do, and truly build a trusting relationship with community. It has to be a priority. And if it's not a priority, then they will face multiple barriers and challenges in really being able to institute and ensure public health and safety.
It's important for community to understand is the district attorney is, if not the most, one of the most powerful players in the entire criminal justice system. We have 2.5 million people in prison around the country. Every single one of them was prosecuted by a district attorney. Anyone who has any level of justice involvement, whether it's probation, prison, or parole, was prosecuted by a district attorney. So one of the things that we want folks to understand, one, CCJRC being a 501c3 nonpartisan organization, we can't tell people how to vote or who to vote for. What we do is educational for constituency to reverse the trend of district attorneys walking into office without even an understanding of their morale or principles or intention in the office from the constituency. So we want people to not only obtain information that's going to help them make a more informed decision on June 26th when the election will take place, but we want people to recognize the true power, influence, and dynamics of this important office, not only for the Boulder community, but the broader criminal justice system itself.
Do you think pursuit of people as revenue streams has been a guiding principle?
I think over the years, over the development of this country, when we are talking about revenue streams based on the warehousing of people or over criminalizing and over prosecution of people, we have to have a real deep and detailed understanding of the historical context of this country. Most people don't know, but you know, this idea of convict leasing is not new. This has been going on for 135 years. This is a continuation of the national growing pains, the national experience that was incubated out of colonialism, slavery, and in modern times has been transformed like any logic of safety. You know, nothing succeeds like success. Change is financially risky. Repackage and redistribute. So when we talk about the role of a district attorney, they actually need to be thinking about alternatives to incarceration, alternatives to the archaic tough on crime model. Because what we do know, aside from the fact that warehousing people is inhumane and should be considered at some level unconstitutional, it doesn't deter people from engaging in crime. It has no impact on crime statistics. What this does is create a revolving door of not only revenue, but people's lives and livelihood and community in this process. And we cannot expect safety from a criminal justice system that's been bent over the years on serving people tough on crime rhetoric.
According to data on hate crimes tracked by the FBI in 2016, a total of 37 out of 229 participating agencies in Colorado reported just 104 incidents. Do those figures, those ratios, strike you as adequate for addressing the dynamic?
I would actually say they do not. I would argue that those numbers are skewed and they're low. I think that the amount of victimization that comes from community on community violence that's based on one's gender, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, cognitive ability, etc., oftentimes from data that we've collected internally goes unrecognized as criminal behavior. Oftentimes it goes uncompensated to victims and victims' family members. So I would argue that a lot of those statistics are actually quite low. A lot of the time, people we have to understand who have been victimized in that capacity are experiencing significant amounts of trauma. Oftentimes, these patterns display urge to protect one's psyche and self-well-being. So reliving that trauma time and time again, which would be mandatory to actually adequately date the experience this individual had to endure, oftentimes does not happen. So I think bottom line for me, when I look at numbers like that, I think about some of the things that I've had to experience over my life, and many of those things have gone unreported, and many of those things were very much based on the color of my skin. And when we assess statistics like that, I think we just have to take them with a grain of salt. But from my perspective, I would assume those are low.
the numbers have been cited as 1 to 40 underreporting.
Mm. 1 to 40 underreporting.
Wow. No, I echo my colleague. I think they are inadequate, and I think there could be multiple reasons as why hate crimes go unreported. And I think that as a state, we need to really look at that in Colorado in reference to how are we tracking hate crimes? How do we incentivize folks to report hate crimes? What is the process and mechanism in which confidentiality is held, protection of those who are experiencing hate crimes occurs? And I think how do we incentivize and motivate as a state, especially our leadership, that we have zero tolerance as it relates to hate crimes. And so I do believe that those numbers are low and probably do not reflect the amount of hate crimes that actually occur. I myself don't know the data on how that's truly tracked, but I can tell you as an African-American man born and raised here in Colorado, I've had multiple experiences of hate crime that I did not report, right? And so that's what's happening in the culture in our communities, that folks who experience hate crime are not reporting. And then the mechanism in which hate crimes are reported, how is that evaluated? Is it sufficient? Is it adequate? And I think the criminal justice agencies focusing on hate crime need to ramp up what that looks like and what is the structure and strategies in which they ensure that they are capturing when hate crimes occur and what is the accountability around it.
For me, in this context, it becomes what tools are at a DA's disposal to have an effect on the trajectory and to lift the standard of interaction.
Absolutely. And I think that district attorneys, there's two folds to that particular piece, right? There's the actual reporting and then there's the prosecution. And like you said, what is the responsibility of a district attorney? And is that a priority of an elected district attorney to adequately prosecute hate crimes and actually have policies and statute in place that reinforce the adequate prosecution of hate crimes? And what is the intentionality behind elected DAs and their administrations when it comes to hate crime?
And I would just add one other thing. I would also, when acknowledging a DA's role in addressing hate crimes, really take a look at how they are allocating victim services. At the end of the day, if somebody experiences a hate crime, a violent crime, and the assailant, their whereabouts are unknown, maybe they're never captured, a prosecution never takes place, but this incident of trauma, this grotesque demonstration of hatred based on whatever category you choose from occurred, the DA's office should consider themselves as a provider for this individual because they are the ones who have the ability and the resources to deal with these types of incidents housed within their units. So I think when we're talking about how do we help heal and roles the district attorney has the ability to fill, we need to take a look at how they assess people who have been victimized and traumatized in the community, whether or not a prosecution actually took place.
I've often contended that the lion's share of damage done from abuse comes not from the act itself, but the search for justice unanswered.
In 2016, the last major DA race in Colorado, 17 out of the 22 judicial districts ran uncontested. So the original archaic formula that district attorney's offices, not just in this state, but around the country, have become accustomed to operating under is the fact that we don't need to be community figures, even though our community is the constituency who puts us in, has the potential to take us out of office. I think that role is transforming. You can't be an effective district attorney, a head district attorney, without knowing the walks of life that are involved in your community. If somebody who is experiencing a state of homelessness votes, they're your constituent. And that is something that I think not just district attorneys, but in electoral politics, we really need to start to acknowledge that the archaic and old school way of thinking is outdated and does not serve the community where we're at today.
You're listening to Metro on KGNU. I'm Robin Ryan, and today we're speaking to Justin Cooper and Alex Landau with the Colorado Criminal Justice Reform Coalition. You have your commercial districts and their ideas. Our city should look idyllic, and anything that doesn't look like it belongs on the cover of Good Housekeeping doesn't belong here. And we're the community. We're paying your salary, footing your campaign. So any of the folks that are doing manual labor work here, they're really not from here. They're being bussed in. How do you define what principles guide?
I think that's the analysis that's so important for a newly elected DA. They have to understand, like you said, not only just the dynamics or the optics of a community, whether it's the commercial side of it, the residential side of it, the actual voters themselves, the business community. What are the demands when we say community and newly elected DAs that are responsible to the constituents that voted him in the office. It has to be inclusive of all constituents, and that has to be understood. And I also think that in developing that relationship, similar to what my colleague Alex highlighted, is the transparency is vital in building a relationship, a trusted relationship with community. Most voters, we have found through our Know Your DA campaign that we have been running since 2016, that most voters actually didn't know that DAs are elected.
The funds that have been thrown to these campaigns, the total for the two of them exceeds $250,000. What I find troublesome is that in the case of Representative Foote, 14 of his top 20 donors aren't even human beings. With regard to Mr. Doherty, 11 of his top 20 donors are not Colorado residents. How can the people be assured policy reflects public will if a campaign's success is not determined by that constituency?
How can we ensure that the newly elected DA is accountable to effective policy if the vehicle in which they may or may have not gotten elected is not driven by that constituency? Whether it's campaign finance, like you just highlighted, in which the vehicle was in, whether it's an errant parency in reference to district attorney races that go unopposed, those vehicles, I think, need to truly be evaluated and looked at when it comes to campaign finances as it relates to the constituency. The data that you just shared with listeners, I can assure you, although publicly available, most voters are not paying attention to. So I think the first thing that the constituency could do is educate themselves on the very data that you just highlighted, to where now, with these two particular candidates, those questions can arise. They can ask them directly and raise awareness to the candidates that voters are aware. I think the second thing that the constituency can do is really look to get involved in advocacy and policy as it relates to campaign finance. CCJRC is a 501c3 nonprofit. A nonpartisan organization can't weigh in on how the candidates have raised their funds. What I can say is that I do think that voters in an advocacy role can start to apply public pressure on campaign finances and campaign fundraising. It's a second thing that the constituency can do. I think a third thing that a constituency can do, based upon whoever wins the primary on June 26th, because whoever wins that primary will be Boulder's next district attorney. This particular election came at a midterm point where the prior elected district attorney stepped down. And one of the candidates was appointed, Mr. Doherty was appointed by Governor Hickenlooper, and then was contested by Mr. Foote. And that created this election. The question that the constituents have to ask themselves, given the campaign finance data that you just shared on how they're raising money, is if whomever is elected, what does accountability look like after they're elected? Even if the presumption is that the constituencies are not the ones responsible for putting them in office. Because I think that now that your listeners have this information, they have to be more passionate and adamant about turning out to vote. That is the biggest accountability, regardless of how they have raised their campaign finances, to say, this vehicle won't put you in office. We will as voters. And if you don't respond to our concerns with how you have raised your finances, you have to worry about if you will be voted for by us or not. That is the biggest accountability to that particular question, in my humble opinion, that I think constituencies can say, no more, no mas. We're voting. We're turning out at the polls June 26th and know that we now know how you have raised your finances and we're concerned with that. It doesn't align with our values, going back to my earlier statement. Candidates running for district attorney, like my colleague highlighted, the field itself has changed. The public will is demanding more progressive, reform-oriented elected district attorneys. That is a culture that sets the tone to say you are responsible to the constituency and not your funders. That is where the rubber will meet the road. And that's why voters will have the opportunity to make an informed decision on who the next district attorney in Boulder will be.
I would just add to that also quickly, part of knowing how to hold any elected official accountable, in this case, the district attorney, is to educate yourself. We also have put together a nonpartisan voter guide. We have sent out 13 questions to each candidate that they have responded to, and we are printing their responses verbatim. No edits, nothing, just the way we received them. And that will be available to all the constituents of Boulder. We can make that available in person and on digital platforms. So we are really, to the truest sense, working from a nonpartisan platform platform to educate constituencies on the true power dynamics and influence of not just this office, but the broader political sector. Because for far too long, have our voices been unheard, or have we been uneducated to the people who are running for these offices? And that creates a lack of accountability and zero transparency.
Voters will be able to go on to our website, www.ccjrc.org, to download the Boulder DA voter guide. So we encourage listeners, if you are a voter in Boulder and you want to hear the responses of the candidates, go on to our website to download the voter guide. I think listeners have an opportunity to ask questions that they're concerned about and care about. They have the opportunity to elevate their voices with candidates running for district attorney in Boulder. The one thing that I will add for the listeners out there and the voters to consider is this. We are at an opportune time in our state and across the country, but more particularly in our state, to have a new conversation about what we believe public safety means. Far too long, we have dealt with this antiquated narrative of tough on crime and law and order. We have attempted to incarcerate our way into safety, criminalize our way into safety, and arrest our way into safety, and it has not worked. Colorado right now spends $1 billion on prisons every year. Most voters, the general public, does not know the level of investment of taxpayer dollars that goes into our public safety system. The district attorneys, there's 22 judicial districts. They're all local. Their budgets are county budgets, not state budgets. I highlight that to say it's vitally important that us as constituents and voters really understand the role and responsibility and the structure of district attorney offices, and that we demand that their operation, their business, aligns with our values of what we perceive to be public health and safety, and not this antiquated, outdated narrative of tough on crime and law and order, because it has not worked. It will not work. And listeners and voters, I encourage you to know that we get to choose what really works.
Used to wear a t-shirt that said freedom ain't free, and folks would say, what does it cost?
What does it cost?
You got to pay attention.
Got to pay attention. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you indeed.
I've been talking with the Deputy Director and Community Outreach Coordinator with the Colorado Criminal Justice Reform Coalition, Justin Cooper and Alex Landau. I wanted to clarify something about the campaign finance information that was discussed during the interview. The figures referred to are cumulative for the political figures' careers, not necessarily strictly to this campaign. Thanks for listening to Metro on KGNU. I'm Robin Ryan.